Hello and welcome to the Overvolted Podcast. I'm your host, Kirk Johnson. We have Matthew.
Hello.
And Aurelian with us.
Hello.
Unfortunately, Jim wasn't able to make it for this one. He's working hard on a video that should be out in the next, probably by the time you hear this. So hope you guys go and watch that. It's going to be really good. I hear he's put a lot of effort and it's kind of long, which is what we like, right? So on this podcast, we're actually going to talk about a article that Matthew wrote about the Kronos Group and their Vulkan API. We're going to talk a little bit about consoles as well. And by a little, I mean probably most of it. And then we have some new information from Intel about Rocket Lake and Alder Lake that we'll discuss. But we're going to actually open up this podcast talking about this podcast, actually. We have been working on our design for it. You guys, from the feedback that we've seen, really like the on-screen display of who's talking, and we're going to try including that in every podcast going forward. We've been working really hard on the audio. I know a lot of you guys were saying that the audio wasn't quite balanced well enough, and we've been working on getting our audio cleaner and more balanced for that. Obviously, it's going to take a lot of time for us to edit the podcast afterward to make sure that it hits those kind of goals. We're going to have to find a pretty good medium in order to get that streamlined and get these out to you as fast as possible. We do have some some fun things that we wanted to talk about with the podcast as well. First off, taking ideas, things that you might want to see in the podcast, either technically or content wise. Go ahead and leave comments for that. Let's see, what was it we were talking about just before we came on the air?
Since Jim isn't here, I had suggested that when he isn't here, we should have a soundboard so that we can just, you know, evoke him whenever we need him.
That's right. Yeah, we need to actually have like 20 clips of the best Jim moments. Maybe him going, "All right, guys, how's it going?" And of course, his sound off. And I'm sure you guys have a better idea of sound clips that you would like us to just interject for fun throughout the podcast. Yeah. So if you have a timestamp for a video, give it to us, put it in the description, say this video at this timestamp, and maybe even put a quote of the words that you want us to clip so that we can build a repository of, what do you want to call it?
Sound bites.
Sound bites. There's a funny term that people like to use, like Jimisms. Adortisms that we can have.
I was thinking it would work a little bit similarly to the Gordon Ma-Ung soundboard. Have you seen that soundboard? That's a funny soundboard. From, Gordon Ma-Ung doesn't work there anymore, but he used to work for Maximum PC. Mm-hmm. And I think they had a podcast, and there's a lot of great clips from that.
And it's probably not something we're going to inject live while we're doing the stream, but if we actually do change the podcast to being a live stream at some point, we could use it as a soundboard.
Yeah.
We can ask him to say donkey, like in Shrek with the thick
that's
accent.
That's offensive.
We could use it. Yeah, but we could use it for like when we want to make a pun, like donkey. No,
God. Shrek. The first Shrek movies are good though.
Yep.
It's a shame what happened to them. Anyways.
Yeah, and if we don't have a soundbite, we could probably give Adored a list of things
to say.
Just like at the end of, what is it, Screen Rant or, you know, their movie reviews and such. They like to have that, here, read this in this voice, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
We haven't talked to Jim about this, by the way.
Of course not. We're going to approach him with a list of like 20 adortisms to say. Here, say these things and you'll be able to hear his nice thick Scottish accent roll over all these words. That maybe even some tongue twisters. That might be interesting to see. Mm.
He will not like the idea. Let's see.
That's why we're gonna take some samples first.
Yeah,
he's gonna get like 5 minutes in this podcast and be just shaking his head.
Yeah, that's another one. That's a gym phrase. I was just shaking my head.
I don't know what to tell you guys, right?
I can't do a Scottish accent.
Yeah,
it's the accent.
I'm sure we have a few sound bites just from the podcasts we've had so far, because since this is an unscripted podcast, then we sometimes will come through a little bit better than any of the prepared scripts that Jim has made for the official videos, obviously. So you'll find a lot more witticisms in the podcast than through any of the script content, but the scripted content does have some good stuff with it. He does leave some of his reaction and laugh and stuff in there. So if you find anything good, even just how he reacts to Intel, AMD, who knows, just give us a timestamp. We'll see if we can grab that audio clip for you and get it put onto the soundboard, or at least in an asset library that I can just throw into the podcast.
Let me say that I've been locked in house for the past 9 days already due to the human malware thing. So for me, the days blended to each other, and maybe I'm a bit, rusty on the news that happened this week.
What, you mean those lockdown days didn't give you the opportunity to read through articles?
Well, yeah, but I'm locked in the house while working, and this for me at least ends up that I actually work more hours than when I go to the office, because work is never like done. You can still work like half an hour more. And
yeah, I kind of got roped into our help desk and am helping people get set up for VPN remote work from home kind of access, and so I've been doing a lot of that grunt work too, and that's contributed to longer hours for sure. But I've still been going into the office, because do you know how many people are like, oh, I shut off my machine at night just by habit? It's like, oh yeah. I'm gonna have to turn on Wake on LAN for you guys.
Yeah,
I guess that is kind of a fun thing that you don't normally get with newscasters or the PC tech press kind of people, is actually having people that are currently working in the industry being able to provide real stories back to people that listen and talk. You know, you always hear the person that's completely switched over to dedicating their entire day into actually writing news, generating content, and they kind of lose on that ability to have boots on the ground, so to speak.
Yeah.
Vulcan? Do you want to talk about Vulcan?
Let's go ahead and talk about your article, if you want to go ahead and lead us off here.
So they announced ray tracing for Vulcan, finally. And you might notice this article is very short. It's because, this is basically what was in the press release. And they have more information on the Kronos Group website, but I don't have access to that because they didn't even put the webpage up until the embargo expired, and this was written like the day before. But anyways, Vulcan ray tracing is now a thing. It's supported by AMD, NVIDIA, Intel. It's hopefully going to be a big thing, because RTX has been sort of it's been pretty much a failure, because NVIDIA can't support ray tracing by themselves. It's not even about the performance, it's about the sort of, like, I guess it's closed source. I think that's the big issue. And NVIDIA has to, like, basically go to every single developer that they want to have it, because they're not going to do it on their own. It's unfamiliar, it's new.
If they're already subscribed to GameWorks, then they'll have access to the RTX libraries.
Yeah.
There's not really a whole lot of drive to add RTX because of how it has to be done right now. They basically have to go through all of their assets and paint, like, windows. They have to outline them and say, this is the part that's going to be ray traced. And that way they'll get the proper reflections and things like that. But then they also have to go through the entire game and make sure that they don't have any of those 1% minimums and causing these huge drops in performance, causing stuttering, because they're designing these things for, first and foremost, consoles, unfortunately.
And there's always the risk that you go through that work, and if it incurs a little penalty in the performance, then people actually don't use it because they turn RTX off when they play.
Yeah, and that is the nice thing about it, is you do have the ability to just turn it off. But the problem is, when you do that, all of the benefits that that RTX was bringing to give window reflections and everything, the developers now have to do their usual hacks that they've had to do to get window reflections and things like that. And it just becomes a lot more effort for the developers to not use a RTX because of all the stuff that they have normally had to do in years past. They have to continue doing with those window reflections to even make them look decent. But now, on top of that, they have to just paint in this overlay and bypass that, all that work entirely, for the people that actually will use ray tracing.
And how many are there actually people who are having RTX in the whole gaming market? I think they are still quite a slim minority.
Yeah, I would assume it's the 2070 and 2080 and 2080 Ti kind of users. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be many people that are running a 2060 that's actually going to be able to turn on ray tracing and have a good experience with it.
Yeah.
But Vulkan's really good for this ray tracing because Vulkan, it can extract more performance out of these GPUs. At least that's what the trend seems to be. Like, look at like Doom Eternal. It runs great. Basically everything.
What I wonder is, is Vulkan gonna take advantage of the RTX hardware that is on the GPU, or how is this done?
I'm assuming that it's gonna work a lot like DirectX's implementation, so DXR, where it will allow Vulkan, in this case, to detect whether RTX is available, and if so, use that code path, and if it's not available, it'll go down a different code path of AMD's option or some kind of brute force method, you know, whatever it needs to do, or just say it's not available and make it so it doesn't even turn on to begin with. I would assume those are kind of the options there.
Well, I mean, Vulkan's like the best API basically for both compatibility and performance, so I'd expect ray tracing to get a lot better, both in terms of performance and the software, because it's one thing for the performance to be bad, it's another for the software to only exist when NVIDIA can intervene. I think ray tracing is going to get a lot more open with Vulkan, and even if the performance is bad, at least ray tracing can still exist. So this is why the Vulkan ray tracing is like really good.
I agree. I also believe that the software stack, the APIs, is the advantage here. You, as a game developer, you just develop the game once on Vulkan, and then it just kind of should be able to deploy it on any hardware. I don't expect it to be maybe faster than kind of a natively writing something in for NVIDIA or something, but I do expect it to be very close in terms of penalty that you have to pay. But I would say that should be possible to do it rather efficiently.
Yeah, and that is the benefit that, you know, Vulkan has, is they write it for Vulkan, and now it can be played on Linux, Mac, or PC.
Yeah.
The downside is Vulkan. Do we know if we have console support for Vulkan yet?
The Switch does, Xbox and Sony don't, but I think Microsoft will probably put Vulkan on the Xbox Series X. I think that's highly likely.
On X,
I don't know about Sony. Because I feel like Sony would see Vulkan as enabling Microsoft, because it would make for easy ports from Sony to Microsoft, and also the shader support for Vulkan is identical to DirectX 12. So I feel like Sony would be like, we can't support Vulkan because that's enabling our competition, because Sony's gonna Sony.
The problem with walled gardens is that it makes people want to join that walled garden less likely.
Yeah.
Long term is not the winning strategy.
Openness is the long term winning strategy.
Yeah, absolutely.
But speaking of consoles.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the announcements that we got since we last did our podcast. We actually did our podcast on the eve of launching the Xbox X information. We didn't have this when we did our discussion, and well, it's nice to see now, that's for sure.
So yeah, everything looks pretty good. It's really impressive what they've done, especially AMD.
Oh yeah.
This is a very good omen for RDNA 2.
As we talked about with the whole Samsung partnership that AMD had, this might be some outflow of that partnership, allowing AMD to work on power a lot more with their GPUs. That's been the big thing with their GPUs, is the whole hot and loud meme, right?
Yeah. But also, these GPUs are tiny.
Yeah, they are. They are really small as far as, their node size is helping enable that too. But the actual square millimeters is pretty small too.
Yeah, so the Xbox Series X APU, 52 compute units and 8 Zen 2 cores for 360 millimeters squared. You can probably take off about 80 to 100 millimeters squared for just like the GPU parts. And you still get, you get below 300 millimeters square. That's a little bit larger than the 5700X for a lot more performance. Because this Xbox GPU, even at its 1.8 gigahertz clock speed, is probably at least as fast, if not faster, than like the 2080 and the 2080 Super. Like, it's ridiculous.
And the really cool part is that this GPU is going to be almost identical to something we'll see on the desktop as well. You can pretty much guarantee that.
And also the Sony APU is pretty cool too. Sony took the opposite approach. We don't know how big their die is, but it's 56 compute units.
36.
Oh, yeah, sorry, 36 compute units and 2.23 gigahertz with variable frequency. And I would expect this to run at 2.2 gigahertz pretty much all the time. So it ends up, the Xbox APU only ends up being about 20% faster in terms of teraflops, which is quite a narrow lead given how big the Xbox APU is.
Well, and Sony was talking about how they've been using, what was it, SpeedShift, PowerShift, whatever?
SmartShift.
SmartShift, which we know is a laptop thing that AMD kind of announced back when they were talking about the 4800U and such, where they can balance the power between the CPU and the GPU kind of on the fly, very dynamic, and allow the total system power to be kind of managed that way. And Sony was talking that up big time, which leads me to think that the Xbox also has that capability.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
It does not?
No. The Xbox Series X, the CPU and GPU clock speeds are locked.
Okay. So,
which surprised me.
Yeah, that does surprise me too. I do see here that it is called out as a variable frequency for the PlayStation, which is probably part of that whole smart shift mentality there.
Yeah.
That will be interesting to see how much power the PlayStation 5 pulls versus the Xbox.
The Xbox clearly has the better processor, but on a technical level, I'm more impressed with what Sony has because of the smart shift technology and what they've been able to do with a much smaller processor, as well as the NVMe SSD. This NVMe SSD, I think, is the fastest anywhere. I'm pretty sure there's not a desktop NVMe drive that is as fast as this at 5.5 gigabytes a second, which I assume is reads, probably not writes.
Yeah, it's probably sequential read.
That is 500 megabytes faster than what Gigabyte has, and I believe that's the fastest one that you can buy right now, the Aorus.
Currently, there are new NVMEs that are coming down the pipe. Think of them as second gen NVMe.
Yeah.
PCIe 4 kind of drives that do hit 5.5 and even 6.5s theoretically, right?
But this 5.5 is faster than what anything we have right now, and it will still be fast when it launches.
The interesting thing is that the Xbox, they called out that they have the ability to compress that I/O so that they can get a 4.8 gig per second compressed read off of that drive. Which, if you think about it, a lot of game files and stuff are already in a compressed form, so I'm not quite sure how well that's going to translate, but it does come out to the PlayStation 5 also obviously reading compressed files and decompressing in RAM kind of stuff. So they just didn't quantify that as far as I'm aware, but the Xbox, they called it out specifically. So that's going to be interesting to see which one does come out on top. Obviously the PlayStation 5 has what looks like a superior NVMe, just hands down.
Also, expansion, Xbox has this like proprietary nonsense, and Sony decided to put in just another NVMe slot, which is nice.
Yeah.
I don't know why Microsoft continues to do this proprietary stuff, which is really weird because Sony, you would expect to be more proprietary. They're not. They've always let you like put your own hard drives in, your own SSDs, whatever. I mean, the PlayStation 4 never shipped with an SSD, but you can put one in there if you want to, like for boot. But otherwise, these specifications are quite similar.
Well, Xbox did call out saying that you could do a USB 3.2 external drive, like a thumbstick, whatever. You can put a high-capacity, fast storage and expand it that way. So you could potentially have thumbsticks of games that you can just swap in and out, depending on what game you wanted to play, so you don't have to re-download, reinstall, or uninstall games. Because, quite frankly, having a terabyte of space, while it sounds like a lot of space, a lot of games nowadays are 100 gig, right?
Yeah.
My test bench has a 1 terabyte SSD, and that's not even enough for, like, half of the games.
Test benching, yeah.
Yeah. And then I have, like, my 250 gigabyte boot drive, then I have an extra 500 gigabyte SSD in there. I think, most of the games fit on the 1 terabyte, but not all of them, not nearly all of them. But what's really the real story with this concerning PC is RDNA 2. and the specifications of the GPU.
Yes, because we already do know quite a bit about the Zen 2 cores, obviously, as well as how they would perform at whatever speeds that they're listed at here. So,
but this should make NVIDIA worry. Like the performance per area, the performance per watt, the clock speeds, these are all a lot better than I expected. These are really good. Just look at that that PS5 GPU, 2.2 gigahertz. And this is supposed to be this is in a power efficient context. Sony doesn't want to push this thing too hard because then it goes outside of its power efficient range. Imagine what this can get when you put it on a desktop card where efficiency isn't that important. Could we even see like 2.3, 2.4, or even 2.5 gigahertz? Who knows?
I have a hard time thinking that because with all the GPUs we've seen before, even if they had been going at like 1600, people have been pushing them to 2.1 and they kind of hit a wall. Yeah, I'm thinking that Sony is going kind of on the higher end of that because they only did 36 CUs. They have to do something to match those 52 that Xbox is putting out.
I don't think they're doing that to match it. I think they're doing it because it's easy. Because here's the thing. The 5700 XT doesn't have a hard time getting up to 2.2 gigahertz. It's not that inefficient either. When you overclock it, the reason why you wouldn't overclock it that much is because it runs into like internal bottlenecks. Like that's like within the core itself. So when you go from like 2 to 2.2 gigahertz, you don't get that much performance. But power consumption is still acceptable.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're pushing it that hard.
Do you think they're trying to shave some money off of the CPU GPU to dump into the NVMe? Or do you think they're just trying to shave money altogether to come in at a slightly lower price than the Xbox?
I think it's both of those. I think Sony just didn't want to make like a super expensive console. Because it seems like ever since the PS3, they've been afraid of making a console that's too expensive. And that was the downfall of Sony with the PS3, and that was the downfall of Microsoft with the Xbox One. So it looks like Sony's strategy here is to be affordable. And they're trying to keep it affordable for themselves, too. They don't want to bleed money off of this.
Where do you think the prices will land?
$400 for PS5, $500 for Xbox.
I'd almost say a little north of there for initial launch. Probably $500 for the PlayStation, $5 and $6. With $600 for the Xbox. They're still going to lose an arm and a leg for each console they sell.
But oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just getting that foot in the door.
But PlayStation will definitely be cheaper. If it's the same price, they're ripping you off.
Yeah, right. Because you can see they took a lesser CPU and they just butchered the GPU down to 36 CUs instead of 52. So we know it's going to be a cheaper binned chip. It's going to be probably a higher binned GPU. So however they're going to do that, right?
I condemn Sony for using a much smaller processor. I mean, they are taking advantage of the Boost technology. And Microsoft is just using fixed clock speeds. That's pretty lazy. Like, fixed clock speeds. Boost technology has been around for years. And the consoles are in the best position to use it, too.
Especially like speed stepping technology, which is Intel, but still where you can just C-state the CPU.
They've made it so easy and they refuse to use it. That's Microsoft's fault.
Yeah, but that's Microsoft for you.
Okay, well, do we want to talk about Rocket Lake now?
Yeah, it does transition into Rocket Lake pretty well because we're talking...
Because it's bad?
Yes, right? It's more Alder Lake that I was going to... We'll talk about Rocket Lake and then I'll tell you how it ties into...
Yeah, but let's keep this chronological.
You know what's really interesting? I just want to draw attention to right off the bat here. Rocket Lake S, look at the very bottom of Video Card C's chart here. It says Intel SGX Security, Kaby Lake 1.0, oh, yeah. Coffee Lake 1.0, Comet Lake 1.0, Rocket Lake removed.
What? I'm not familiar with this XGS thing. What is this exactly?
Well, you know the LVI issue that reverse meltdown, whatever you want to call it.
Oh,
the new vulnerability that came out.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, it was in particular because of SGX.
Ah.
So you eliminate its SGX and the entire problem goes away.
Ah. Remove security, becomes more secure. That's the Intel way. Anyways, Rocket Lake. So we've had lots of leaks about Rocket Lake. I've sort of leaked something about Rocket Lake. I really confirmed a leak. But Two important things, or well, actually, I guess three important things. It has PCIe 4.0 from the CPU. It seems like they didn't put it on the chipset. They have a new processor core architecture, and it has Z graphics, otherwise known as Gen 12. So it's still unconfirmed exactly what Rocket Lake is, but the common consensus seems to be that it is a backport of Willow Cove cores, which are on the 10 nanometer Tiger Lake architecture, and then it's going to have the Z Gen 12 graphics on the CPU, and then of course it has the PCIe 4.0. That's not up for debate anymore, but that's not certain at this point. There's plenty of reasons why it could be something totally different. I've even heard that new processor core architecture could just be Skylake X or something, or weird mishmash.
At this point, I don't know if there is any real architectural differences in all of these from, say, Skylake, because these all seem to be in that same Skylake family, especially compared to Haswell, Broadwell, those kinds of things. So
I'm on the fence of whether or not it's a backport. I could never get a firm yes or no from my sources. I've heard it's a terrible idea, which makes me think that it is a backport, because Intel seems to have a propensity to do things that are really stupid.
Well, some of it's out of desperation too. If you can't kick out a 10 nanometer.
No, I don't think it's desperation at this point. It's not desperation. They don't know what they want to do. They don't have a plan. They don't have any focus. They don't have like an overarching strategy. They're just floundering at this point. That's the only explanation. Because they continue to do really stupid things.
With a complete collapse of their whole 10 nanometer lineup that they had been planning for years. Yeah, they're just scrambling for sure.
But one of the interesting things here is that it does have the confirmation for Z graphics. And I believe that is on a separate die. I talked about this late last January, that it would have a separate die. And even before then, there was rumors that it would have a separate die. Because there was a very early last year, there was a roadmap that said Rocket Lake would have 10 nanometer graphics, but it was ambiguous as to whether it meant 10 nanometer in terms of it's a 10 nanometer architecture, or 10 nanometer as in it's the 10 nanometer node. But it should be 14 nanometer CPU with either Willow Cove or Skylake X or something, or something that's a little bit more unique, and it'll have the separate GPU on its own dedicated die, which I speculate will make appearances on more than just Rocket Lake. Otherwise, that's really weird to just make a really tiny iGPU for a CPU that's probably not going to sell very well.
But is that the 10 nanometer or 14 nanometer for the Z?
10 nanometers for the Z graphics on its own die.
So it's going to be on 10. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think they could even backport it. I guess they could, but why would they? I think that they made a separate iGPU. I think that's actually probably good evidence that this isn't an architectural backport, because if they backport the CPU cores, they might as well backport the graphics as well, unless like the die would be like really big, because these cores are bigger than like the Skylake cores. Like, so when you see like Tiger Lake and Ice Lake, the core size is identical to anything on 14 nanometer, and that's a good indication that these cores could be like maybe even twice as large on 14 nanometers. So maybe the graphics weren't backported. You might make the argument that the separate iGPU doesn't matter when talking about a backport, because the die would be too big, but you also have to recognize that the iGPU is quite small. I think it's only 32 execution units, which is only a third of the size of the Tiger Lake iGPU.
Well, you got to think too, it's running in 10 nanometer, so they're filling up some of their 10 nanometer fabrication bandwidth there. They're not using any of the 14 nanometer stuff, which is already taxed, right?
Yeah, that could be a reason.
And these dies are so freaking small that they probably get huge, over 80% yield on these, even with the process how it is. So I can see all of the factors of them wanting to do the 10 nanometer over a 14.
Well, when it comes to determining whether or not this is a backport or not, it's hard to tell. Intel is an enigma. Nobody understands them. I don't think Intel even understands itself.
They're just a small blue box.
Yeah.
Just spits out chips.
That's what it seems like, especially with Alder Lake.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk about Alder Lake. One thing I did want to call out, though, while we're still on Rocket Lake, though, is the DMI. They've doubled up to 8 lanes instead of 4. And so they're doubling their bandwidth. Hopefully, I mean, it's running the same 3.0, at least what the chart says here is that it's running 3.0 for DMI, which might just be a simple doubling. So 8 gigatransfers per second, which is about 4 gigabytes per second. Hopefully that'll be enough. We know that if you have even one of the new NVMEs running off of one of those, that's going to get saturated instantly. if you can fully saturate it with the NVMe. And if we go to Alder Lake, we can see why that's important.
So we talked about Alder Lake on the last podcast, because this was just leaked right before we recorded the last podcast. And we thought it was probably not true, because just the rumors that Alder Lake S, a desktop part coming for the desktop, that's absolutely certain, is a Big Little design. And I wanted to look into it because, well, me and Jim leaked that 1080 desktop was canceled. So we were either thinking that this was a whole fabrication, even though it seemed legit. We figured that, well, maybe it's just maybe old information, maybe it's fake, who knows. And what we ended up discovering was that it's probably true. So I asked around about this, and I got a response that gives me the strong impression that this part does exist, and it was made for the laptop, and it's being ported over to the desktop. So this isn't really a desktop CPU. And I'm giving Intel a lot of credit here, because no sane person would design a Big Little CPU for the desktop. I don't think Intel's that stupid.
We've been proven wrong before, though.
Yeah, I know, but I want to believe they're not this stupid. I'm giving them a lot of credit here. I know a lot of people are like, it has to be true, it's Intel. Of course Intel would do this. But I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. Because this is really dumb.
The thing I can see them doing it for would be like the Nukes, those kind of quasi-desktop all-in-one situations where it's like a laptop in a box, but they want to bring up the thermal threshold so that it can perform better, but still be ultra-small form factor.
But if this is running Windows, then these Big Little cores, it's just going to be a nightmare, because it needs a lot of support. The Windows 10X, I think, is what supports Big Little, and that's made basically for Lakefield, and that's in its infancy. Big Little for Windows has momentum, but there's a big difference when we're talking about an entire Intel generation powered by Big Little as opposed to one specialized SKU for Microsoft.
Well, we've already seen Microsoft being able to differentiate between hyper-threaded and non-hyper-threaded cores. We've also been able to see, even with AMD, where each core is running at a different frequency.
But this is a lot different.
Yeah, this is something where if a thread gets pinned to a little core, it can't just all of a sudden ramp up to become a big core like with our current CPUs. And so whatever is developed on it is going to have to be aware that these are supposed to be light threads.
Also, think about data hopping. It would be very hard for the data and the workloads in one part of the CPU to really interact with the other part. I mean, like, how is that going to work?
It's definitely going to be a NumaNode situation, and they're going to have some performance hits if they leave both on simultaneously. But the question is, will they?
Really, this is like the worst of both worlds.
It is.
Especially for the desktop. For the laptop, there's an argument to be made, because there could be power efficiency savings, and Lakefield is a laptop design. But for the desktop, it makes no sense to make this. It only makes sense to make a 10-core or 12-core CPU in the same area.
Unless if you're making something that's supposed to hit a thermal envelope.
Yeah, but we know Intel doesn't care about those.
Yeah, that is true. And even if you were trying to hit a thermal envelope, you would just do what they do with their U CPUs, right? They would just ramp the clock down to almost the baseline C state. Yeah. And boom, there's your power savings.
That is the baseline.
Yeah.
When it ramps down.
Well, it can go through any of the C states and have any stepping in between.
Yeah. But I strongly believe that the original leak, that 10 nanometer desktop, does not exist. I strongly believe that that leak is true, and it's still true. Because I do not think that this Alder Lake S CPU was designed for desktop. Because this doesn't make any sense. And also, we were given a clear roadmap. Comet Lake, Rocket Lake, nothing. Then Meteor Lake on 7 nanometers. Which should be designed for the desktop, meaning it's not Big Little. Even if our source for that was aware that Alder Lake S exists, they probably would not have thought that it's for the desktop. And it might not even have been on any sort of roadmap that had to do with desktop SKUs.
Yeah, which is why the leak, from what Jim was saying, didn't think that it was for the desktop. They said that there was no desktop chip.
We were actually joking about that on the podcast.
Yeah.
Like, me and Jim were joking, like, oh, maybe our source saw this and they didn't think it was for the desktop, so they just ignored it. But I think that might be what happened. If our source was aware of this, then that might have literally been what happened.
Yeah. And they would have been just as baffled as us when they found out that it was actually going to be for the desktop. And it's like, why? Why?
Because we have a source that was aware of both the desktop and the laptop roadmaps.
Which is a unique position, to say the least.
Yeah. I wonder if Alder Lake S is on the desktop roadmaps right now, and if it is, when it was put on there. God, I'd love to see, like, the history of these roadmaps at Intel. It would be so interesting.
Just take spaghetti and throw it at a wall. You'll probably get the same roadmap.
Yeah. But it's just crazy what they're doing with Alder Lake. This doesn't make any sense. They should really just take the same die and just disable the Atom cores. That's what they should do.
Well, then they have the same die, but without some of the benefit that they might be able to tweak out of it.
There's no benefit. No, there's no benefit. It's a burden.
Compared to not having it at all? I don't know.
It's better if they didn't have it at all. It's just a waste. It's a waste of...
It's a heat sink.
Yeah, there you go. It's inactive silicon.
If it's on the same die, it might be useful. I thought about whether or not these Atom cores would be on the same die or a different die.
If they're different die, then they're just flat out idiots if they put both on the same. Goodness.
I've also thought about if the Rocket Lake iGPU would be on this. I think they're going to put the Rocket Lake iGPU on this CPU. I should ask about that, but I have a strong suspicion that what we see with Rocket Lake, with that iGPU, it's going to be on here as well. Any thoughts about that?
I think that it will need some kind of onboard GPU, and since they're already churning out Xe chips with all their other stuff, I don't see why they wouldn't do the same chiplet architecture.
Yeah, I mean, it's not... I guess it is chiplets, but...
Once you got the tech, you might as well use it, right? I mean, this is what we've been saying that AMD should be doing for their APUs from day one. It's like, oh, look at that extra spot there on the chip. Just stick a Navi core right there, you know?
I don't know if it's chiplets and if they're just using, like, PCI links. I don't know if I'd count it that way. Because that's how they did it in the old days with integrated graphics. And that's not really chiplets. They did it that way because that was like a technical limitation.
Yeah, it's more of a SoC kind of layout as opposed to a chiplet kind of thing like we see with AMD for sure. Maybe even more, you remember the laptop chip that had the Intel CPU and the AMD GPU?
I own one of those. Biggest mistake in my life.
There you go.
Runs so hot and it runs so poorly.
It could just be the same technology as they ran there.
Well, I think if it uses EMIB, I would call it chiplets.
Yeah.
I would give Intel credit if they use EMIB. If they just use PCIe, I won't get them credit.
Well, we will see what they actually do when they officially announce information about this chip.
If we're lucky, it'll get canceled.
Yeah, because there's just... I don't see the target market. I really don't.
Yeah, and how would they even support an entire generation off of this? Unless this is like the one or two top-end SKUs, which would be really weird. How would that even work with like... They make like a bunch of 14-nanometer CPUs, and then like the top one or two, their 9900K successor is going to be like 10 nanometers? That doesn't make any sense. Intel's in such a bad way. I hope Meteor Lake's actually good. But that's like 2022, 2023 or something.
Yeah, and that's the biggest problem we have right now is we're hoping that Intel can come back, bring some good technology to the market, maybe even come up with something innovative like we saw with the chiplets from AMD. But it's so far down the road. It's like 2023 kind of stuff before we even get anything new. Because we've had the picture painted all the way through the end of 2021 and the beginning of 2022, and there's nothing special. It is just the die shrink to 7 nanometer. There's just nothing there.
The thing I'm looking most forward to is a GPU that's not even fabbed at their own foundry.
To be fair, that it's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, that's going
to
be...
Oh, no, that's a good thing. That's a great thing. Even if it's on, like, the old TSMC 7-nanometer node, that's still a good thing that their sort of mid-range GPU is going to be on that node, because we know it's a good node.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be old in 2022, but at least it's still good.
I mean, what a problem to have that you need to print out so many of your portfolio of chips that you have to use somebody else's fab because you can't keep up.
Yeah.
They're just printing and printing money. It's just crazy, especially with how much problems they've been having. This is something that would have just tanked AMD for sure, and we saw that with Bulldozer. They were not able to compete, and they almost went under from it.
It actually really concerns me that Intel and Samsung are having such a hard time with their new nodes. Because if it's just TSMC that's left standing for like the cutting edge stuff, that's not good. That's real bad. You don't want it to be reliant on a single company.
They will have the ability to buy the same machines.
Yeah.
As long as they get the licensing to actually print the same kind of node and whatnot. But as far as the reticles and all that, to actually etch it that size, they can buy the same machines.
Well, if you're an Intel fan, you're in for a rough few years. Don't worry, I've been there. I was an AMD fan from like 2015, 2017. I was a Nintendo fan from 2014 to 2016. I've been in that spot where your favorite company is just awful, but it could get better. If it doesn't, my condolences in advance.
You want to know what I'm a fan of?
What?
It's been this way ever since I bought my K62-500 back in the day. Is I buy for the performance level I want at the price point that I want, and I take the whole system into account when I do, if I'm buying a whole system. And AMD has been the best value at some points when I've needed value, and Intel has been the best performance when I've needed performance. And right now, AMD is the better performance for the dollar and has the highest top-end performance too. Obviously, except for the few percentage points in gaming, which I really could care less about, to be honest, because I actually use my computer for task work more than I do for latest-gen gaming, where I'm pushing 144 frames per second for my monitor kind of thing.
Yeah, let's not speak about the security.
Oh yeah, security.
Well,
that's a big deal.
Security is a big deal from an enterprise standpoint. It's not so much for an end user desktop because there's not a whole lot of information to lose. I mean, you lose one person's...
No, but you get the mitigations.
Yeah, you do get pushed the mitigations from Microsoft, and you can choose whether to install the latest firmwares or BIOS to actually be hampered by that as well. But as far as the security point of view, yeah, you can lose everything on your computer, but it's only affecting you and maybe your family if you have like kids and their socials on there or something like that. But if you look in a corporate standpoint, one person in the company, if they get hit because of some website they went to or something that they ran, the entire organization goes down with them.
Yeah.
And that's impactful. That can kill businesses.
I mean, Intel security is so bad that having their proprietary security solution is worse than having no security solution at all.
You mean the SGX? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
There's organizations that have been wholesale abandoning Windows to go to Macs. That's how bad it is. And that's a pretty drastic move, all things considered. Not very many companies can actually do that, just based on software support.
I wonder if Microsoft is pissed at Intel for this.
I wouldn't think so. They're not really necessarily making their money off of their desktop OS anymore. Hence why they gave Windows 7 to Windows 10 upgrades away for free for a period of time.
Well, I mean, they have Windows Server, but I guess that's not that popular.
No, Windows Server is actually quite popular.
Oh.
When you're talking SMB, enterprise, all of those, if you're not running like core services, web servers, that kind of stuff, those are probably running on Linux for the most part. But internally, SMBs or even enterprise, they're running other things on Windows OSs for web services internally and things like that. Windows is still quite a big thing in the enterprise, especially now that Hyper-V is becoming a thing and competing against VMware. And then you got Azure. You can run Windows OSs in the cloud and not have some of the licensing overhead as if you were running them on-prem.
I never thought about that.
I mean, there's a lot of benefit to still running Windows, so it's not like people are dropping them wholesale.
Okay, are we going to wrap up now?
Yep. Yeah. We are good. So thank you two for joining us and hope everyone's enjoyed listening. We'll probably be back next weekend with another podcast as well. We do record these on the weekends. So when we get these all edited together, we get it out for you. And we do try to stagger this with Adored's actual videos. So you'll probably see this one out just shortly after his video. So I hope you guys enjoyed that one as well. Do like and subscribe. Throw some comments down there. Remember those timestamps that we were talking about of Adoredisms, and help us build that data bank of fun things that we can have Jim interject in without his knowledge. He's probably gonna give us a few sound bites already with "oh my."
Yeah, I would like to be a fly on his wall when he's listening to this podcast.
Oh, I'm sure he'll send us a message or two. You'll be like, what? No. But be sure to hit that alarm button as well so that you can get notified when we get new videos out, especially here on the main channel. And check out the Patreon. Every dollar helps. You can get a membership to our Discord, so that's also a perk out there. What else am I missing? Help support our website by actually driving traffic to it. We have new articles.
Just click on random things.
Yeah, just click on random things. Sit there for a half an hour, right? But thanks for watching, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.